I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long when time goes crawling by. The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face and cry.
Sometimes when you hit bottom, nothing makes you feel as good as a really, really sad song. It's kind of paradoxical, but wallowing in the mud of someone else's gorgeously expressed black pit can make us feel better, and maybe not as alone. This hour, we take stock of the best sad songs, and here's some of yours. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And joining us this hour is Adam Brent Houdeling. He's a writer, editor, singer-songwriter, and the author of This Will End in Tears, The Miserablest Guide to Music. And we want to hear from you. Why do you think we love sad songs? And what's your vote for the best sad song ever? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@WPR.org. And you can also vote for your song on Facebook at The Veronica Rickert Show. And Adam Brent Houdeling, thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Sad songs are your favorite kind of music. What do you think it is that gets under your skin about sad songs?
Well, for me personally, I'm sure it has something to do with my own temperament. But it's really funny. My two favorite kinds of music tend to be sad songs and bubblegum pop from the 60s. So it's the
yin and the yang.
The two extremes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing. I mean, sometimes when you're down and you write about this in your book, sad songs, they pick you up in a weird way. Do you have an idea why this is after your research?
Yeah. You know, I think, there's a few different reasons. One, emotional music tends to have an effect on our brains and kind of shakes loose hormones and dopamine, really lights up our reward center, similar to sex or drugs or chocolate cake. So that's one aspect of it. I think there's also just knowing that someone kind of understands what you're going through. I think that's very helpful. And there's some thought that maybe sad songs help us go a little deeper into whatever grief we're feeling and helps us to focus on that problem and maybe help us solve it a little bit. So,
yeah, and it's interesting. You talk about the difference between depression and melancholy, and depression being a clinical state. And melancholy, you know, I can attest to this. Melancholy can be kind of pleasant in a way sometimes, where you gaze out at the fall leaves falling and you feel kind of bad, but in a kind of good way.
Yeah, you're still quite functional in melancholy. And yeah, I mean, I find a lot of comfort in it. And that's probably one of the reasons I like sad songs, is because I do find so much comfort within melancholy. So
it's interesting thinking about the songs. This is a compendium of lots of sad songs that you listen to. You pick the best ones for you. But I find when I'm listening to sad music, some sad music does make me feel better. You know, like Hallelujah, the Leonard Cohen song. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel better. Some sad music makes me feel worse. And Elliott Smith always makes me feel worse. Why is that?
Oh, boy. Well, it's hard to say. It may just be a personal thing for you. There's a lot of things happening in both those artists that kind of are clues or signifiers to some kind of sad, sad elements within their music. You know, with Leonard Cohen, there's, you know, his very deep voice and deeper tones tend to lend themselves to sadness. There's, you know, in the same way that cellos do, and there's a lot of artists in the book that have those kind of deep baritone voices. And then with Elliott Smith, you know, he has a very fragile voice and kind of like whispers in your ears sometimes, and that can also kind of lead towards a feeling of melancholy. He also does a lot of lo-fi things, and I point out in the book, at least one of the things that I think could be a signifier for sad music is lo-fi tends to kind of suggest that something really authentic is happening, and this is really how he feels. And when you have a massively slick produced song, sometimes that doesn't come through in quite the same way. So I think both those artists are, you know, have things that kind of point them in a sad direction. But in terms of why you find Elliott Smith sad, I don't know. And, you know, it may also be because Leonard Cohen is maybe not so raw. I mean, he was a poet before he was a singer. And Hallelujah is, I mean, it's a pretty deep song. There's a lot to read into that song. Whereas Elliott Smith is usually a little more straightforward in his pain.
That's true. Well, we've got Hallelujah. Let's take a listen.
She tied you to her kitchen chair, and she broke your throne, and she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
And Jeff Buckley there singing the Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah. I think I was probably one of the last people on the planet to hear this song. I think I first heard it. I heard it, of all places, this is embarrassing, during American Idol. And I thought, that's an awesome song. And then I realized that everyone else had already heard it, but I still love it.
Yep. It shot to the top of the iTunes charts after that. But it's been used in so many TV shows and movies. It's kind of it's one of those go-to songs when you want a heartfelt moment. And it's interesting that, you know, the Buckley version is the one that it's actually split between the John Cale version. John Cale, who was in Velvet Underground and had a long solo career, he kind of worked with Leonard Cohen to do a version of it, and actually got more lyrics from Leonard Cohen to work into the song. And that's the version, if I'm remembering correctly, that's the version that Buckley uses. And then I actually don't like the Leonard Cohen version. I think it sounds incredibly dated. But most people are familiar with it through Buckley or John Cale.
I love the stories you write about the writing of this song. Leonard Cohen says he was on the floor of his hotel room in his underwear, banging his head, going, I can't finish the song.
Yeah.
So he worked on this a long time.
Yeah, he did. I think this is the one that he worked on for, 9 years? Something like that. He kind of started it and then put it away and kept going back to it. And it's... I think he's just, you know, it takes him a while. And I know there's a little story in the book, too, I believe, about he met Bob Dylan and he talked about how it took him, you know, years and years to write this certain song. And he asked Bob Dylan how long it took to write one of his songs. And he said, 15 minutes. So it's really interesting how, approaches to songwriting. But.
And so, Adam, what is this song about?
Which one?
Hallelujah. Yeah.
Oh,
I kind
boy.
Of know, but I also don't know. The references to haircutting confuse me.
I'm not sure if I necessarily got to all of the answers in that song. I mean, I think it can be read in a number of different ways. I have to actually go back and reference something here in order to come up with the end, because it is such a twisty song.
Yeah. We can let the song speak for itself. I think it does it pretty well. You can certainly feel it.
Yeah, there's a lot of religious meaning in the song. And he kind of, I think he kind of twists that hallelujah saying, you know, the word hallelujah into what I wrote here is a prismatic array of erotic destruction, artistic compromise, and spiritual collapse.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's about. Of course.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on.
So how did you put together this list? Because there's so much sad music out there that's really excellent. How did you come up with this book, the ones that made it?
Are you referring to the top 100 or the book as a whole?
The book as a whole.
Okay. Well, the idea for the book came about, I was just looking at I was walking around in Brooklyn and I was looking at my iPhone trying to find something to listen to. And I just noticed that all these artists in my iPhone were all kind of sad. They were all kind of known for owning melancholy in a very specific way. And I found that kind of interesting. But the thing that really sparked it for me and made me think that there was a book here was the fact that it spanned such a long time. I had John Dowland in there. I had mm-hmm. Billie Holiday in there. I had, the Smiths. And, it would just, it seems like it's been going on forever. And the fact that there were so many different genres represented and, it went from the 16th century to right up to today, that's what really made me think that there was a book in here. And as far as how I put it together, it was definitely laborious. There were days when when all I did was listen to sad music. And I'm sure that when you add up all the time that I spent just listening to sad music for this book, and I had already spent a significant time before that listening to sad music, I wouldn't be surprised if it's, 2-3 months worth of listening to sad music. Just deciding, whether a certain song, in there's a lot of lists in the book. There's lists for specific artists. There's lists for essays that I write. And then there's the top 100 list. And especially for the top 100, there was a lot of, internal arguments going on in my mind about, I'd listen back and forth to two songs and say, is this really number 26 or is it 27? I don't know. And it changed a lot in its making. But it was definitely hard work.
Good hard work. I don't know. Yeah. Did you feel better or worse, at the end of a day listening to sad music?
It depended on everything else that was going on in my life. I mean, if I had a bad day, it was a struggle. Because it's not, there wasn't an everything in moderation kind of thing. It was more a very deep dive into it. And, what we talked about, earlier about sad songs making us happy. I think that probably, pertains to, listening to sad music for a certain amount of time or until you feel like you are, are feeling a little better. And I didn't do that because of deadlines. I kind of, everything in moderation didn't apply. And I think I went a little too deep.
Well, you mentioned the Smiths before, and we've got a recording of them. So this is a song in your book, Last Night I Dreamed That Somebody Loved Me by the Smiths. Just another false alarm. So tell me how long before the last one. And tell me how long before. So what do you know about that song?
That song is actually for me personally, it was, including that, was really tough. I mean, there were a couple other things that people might consider to be a better Smith song to go in there. I really believe that one is the best one. And another one of those songs, I Know It's Over, is one of the other Smith songs that I was thinking about including in there. But, Morrissey said at one point that he kind of considered I Know It's Over as a sketch for Last Night I Dreamt That Somebody Loved Me. And I really like the intro. It's a the intro to that is kind of a it's pulled from it's kind of just a rabble that's pulled from a miner's strike. So it's the sound of many, many people. And there's something kind of dark about it. And then there's also, you know, the lyrics in that one. One of the things with all the songs that that I chose, I wanted to find songs that were sad in a number of different ways. So there are really sad songs that I love, but the lyrics are, you know, kind of have some hope in them.
Yeah.
And so I likely didn't include those. But this I thought was really great. And also there's strings in it, which kind of lend themselves to a touch of melancholy, especially in pop instances. So, and it's also the last Smiths single. And it was released actually after the Smiths had already broken up. So there's something sad about that too.
Wow, you really did think about this deeply, didn't you?
I did. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Well, we're talking this hour with Adam Brent Houdeling. He is a writer and editor, a singer-songwriter, and the author of the book we're talking about this hour called This Will End in Tears, The Miserablest Guide to Music. As we consider the best sad songs, now Adam has his vote, and you'll find them in his book, but we want to know what you think as well. Why do you think we love sad songs, and what are your favorite sad songs when you want a sad song to really, you know, maybe make you feel better or at least give you some company down there? Well, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 12:30, join us for Chapter a Day as Jim Fleming reads the final chapter from Home for Sale by Leo Litwick. A young orphan makes his way in 1950s Detroit during a real estate boom and bust. Veronica Rickert with you this Friday morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we consider sad songs and why they tend to make us feel better and what that magic is about enjoying a really good sad song. Our guest is Adam Brent Houdeling. He is the author of This Will End in Tears, The Miserablest Guide to Music. And it was fun to think about, you know, what my favorite sad songs were. And one of my favorites, you know, which I've heard in several versions, is Angel from Montgomery. Was that one that you considered?
Who is that by?
John Prine.
John Prine. Yeah, you know, I listened to a handful of John Prine songs. Everyone, you know, in putting together my list, I took a lot of different, you know, it was kind of my own personal opinion. It was, you know, how the songs stack up in a cultural sense. It was straw polls. It was, you know, crowdsourcing on the internet. It was, you know, I put together a lot of things to try and make my decisions about the songs. And for John Prine, Sam Stone was the one that, you know, people were, you know, violently aggressive about me including that in the list.
Well, so, I'm going to try to change your mind. Let's listen to Angel from Montgomery. Right. We can't listen to it because our computer froze up. I guess you win that round, but we'll try it. We'll try it again later. Well, let's take a phone call now and go to Milan from Duluth. Hi, Milan. Hi, you're on the air. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I think it's a great subject. I told your producer that, especially for I think men. I was raised in a tough home where feelings were, you know, you're raised, you know, men don't have feelings, men don't cry, and this, that, and the other. I think when you hear these kind of songs, it allows you, especially in your private time, to kind of have those emotions that are kind of taboo in some cultures. And really helped me when I started sad movies and sad, you know, sad songs, helping to be a better person and a better husband, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of have those feelings. And some of those songs, some of those, just ones that came to my mind were It Must Have Been Love by Roxette. I love that song. Really kind of hits home. And another one by Brooks and Dunn, which is a sad song, but at the same time a happy song, is called Believe. About a man that dies. And but he's a Christian, you know, and whatnot. So those are some songs that are sad, but it helps you get in touch with your feelings.
Yeah, well said, Dan. And I'm sorry, I got your name wrong. That was Dan that we were talking to from Eau Claire. What do you think about it being sort of a channel to express your emotions that maybe are kind of hard to get out?
Yeah, you know, I think that's absolutely true. Listening to sad music is an extremely intimate experience. You know, you're not at a, you know, you're not playing volleyball on the beach listening to sad music. You're likely not at a dinner party with your friends listening to sad music. You're likely alone. You know, you're alone in your car. You're alone at home. You're alone on a walk with your headphones in. And, you know, there's another aspect to it that that I think is really personal. And that's, you know, I think with sad music, you know, I think this is probably true with all, you know, specifically pop music. I think sad music lends itself very well to it. It's kind of an idea that that, you know, it's almost like a novel in that there's only so much information that you know, a 3-minute song can impart to you in the lyrics. And it gives you an opportunity to, like, plug your own experiences into, you know the song is about a broken heart. You know that, they broke up. You know certain things, but you don't know everything. Mm. And, you know, if you've had that same experience or you're struggling with that, I think it allows you to kind of plug little pieces of your personal experience into the song, which is a pretty subconscious thing. But I think it could be pretty important. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that call, Dan. That was well expressed, and we will try again to listen to Angel from Montgomery. We'll see if it works this time.
I am an old woman named after my mother. My old man is another. Child has grown old. Dreams were thunder. Lightning was desire. This old house burnt down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing I can hold on to.
It's a hard way to go, isn't it, Adam? I hear that and I think, yeah, you know, there are those days when nothing really matters and nothing's satisfying. And it's on a day like that that I listen to this song.
Yeah. I don't know. I still make an argument for Sam Stone. Sam Stone is a dark song.
All right, tell us about that one.
It's a really dark song. Well, it's kind of a Vietnam-era tragedy that comes back from the war. His nerves are pretty frayed. He says he has shrapnel in his knee, and he's addicted to morphine. And after he comes home, things snowball pretty quickly. He says there's an overdose hanging in the air. And, of course, he does the protagonist of the song does OD. And then his family has to sell their home in order to buy a casket for him.
That's sad.
So it's really dark. Yeah.
Okay, you win. That is definitely sadder. Sorry, we don't have that one to listen to. But we do have another one that you write about. It's in your top 10, I believe. Not really a song, but the Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber. And this one is so rich. I mean, you can hear what I think is especially compelling about that selection is how it's so beautiful on the one hand and so sad. I mean, it combines this fragile beauty with this despair And it's just so potent. And I think everyone's probably heard this. It's been used in soundtracks a lot. But let's take a listen. It's the adagio for strings. And you write about this particular sort of descending, sort of weeping sound that the strings make in this one.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, that's kind of a signifier that you find in a lot of sad songs, is that kind of descending, you know, pattern. I mention it as Dowland's falling tear motif. That John Dowland used a lot, and it kind of, you know, someone recognized it as a, you know, almost like a tear kind of straining down a cheek. So, so yeah, that happens a lot. And that song specifically, the Adagio, it's not just in my top 10, it's number one. So, you know, yeah, it's kind of unapologetically lyrical. There's that beautiful breathless climax that it has, long notes. There's something kind of unresolved about it at the end. And it's been used for countless funerals, for FDR, for Princess Grace of Monaco, for Albert Einstein. It's been played. It's been played. It was played quite a bit after September 11th. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of it's been called our national song of mourning. So it's something that music directors go to pretty often, kind of reflexively in times of tragedy.
Do you know anything about what Barber's personal story might have been with this music?
Yeah, you know, I don't think he was necessarily in any kind of a bad place when he wrote it. He was actually vacationing at a villa with his partner. I can't remember where the villa was, but and he was thrilled when he wrote it. He wrote a letter to a friend of his saying he just finished the Adagio for this. I mean, it's just one part of a longer piece of music. But he wrote and said he just finished this Adagio and it's absolutely smashing. Like, he knew he had something special on his hands. And but I don't think at the time that he wrote it, he was necessarily in any kind of a bad place. He was sunning somewhere. So,
well, he knew how to break our hearts with music.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Milan now from Duluth. Hi, Milan.
Hi. Great show. I saw a documentary about Marvin Gaye when he spent 2 years recovering from whatever, trying to get his life back together. And in the interview, he says his goal was to write the saddest song ever. And at the end of the film, they play a piece called Holy, Holy, and it comes at the end of his great album from 1971, whose title I forget. But anyway, it's a great piece with a kind of a gospel touch to it. And I was wondering if your guest had heard of it.
Yeah, thank you for telling us about it. I haven't heard of it. Anna?
Yeah, you know, I listen to a lot of Marvin Gaye. One of the Marvin Gaye things that I really was struck on was his 78 album, Here, My Dear, which I write a lot about in an essay I have on divorce and breaking up. It was basically he wrote it specifically about his divorce. So it's basically a concept album about his divorce. And I believe he had to give all of the proceeds to it to his ex-wife. And that's why it's called Here, My Dear. And there's a lot of sad stuff on there. So I really focused on that one. I did listen to a ton. And I was a big Marvin Gaye fan before. It's hard not to be.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you so much for that vote for Marvin Gaye. You have a chapter on divorce and breaking up songs. And one of them, this is again from your top 10 list, this the Beach Boys, which at first, no, I didn't know this song. I thought, Beach Boys? Really? The feel-good surfing guys? But no, this song is a legitimate sad song, Caroline No.
It's so sad.
tell us a little bit about what you know about Caroline Ngo.
You know, it's based on a lyricist that Brian Wilson worked with. His girlfriend had recently moved to New York and cut her hair. And
again, with the cutting hair, there's a theme.
Yes. That kind of, well, the cutting hair kind of provided an inspiration for the first line of the song. But when he says it's so sad to watch a sweet thing die, when he sings that, like, that just breaks my heart. That kills me. So, yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful song. It's absolutely gorgeous. But that song can really level. I mean, it levels me, and I know it has that effect on a lot of other people too. So,
and it ends with what, dogs barking at a train?
Yeah, well, on the album, yeah, his dogs, I think they're called Banana and Louie. They're kind of, I mean, the album was a little, you know, the album Pet Sounds is a classic, a masterpiece. And it was made, Brian Wilson was going through some things at the time when he was working on that. So there's a lot of little crazy things like that in there. And that kind of adds to me the two dogs barking at a train. I mean, trains in general.
Yes, trains. What is it?
Have
about
a long
trains?
History of leaving. You know. For some reason there are a lot of train songs that are about leaving, not arriving. So
the trains only go in one direction.
Yeah, exactly. So I found that to be a pretty sad coda, that song, the dogs barking at the train.
Another phone call here. We've got Jim, who's on the line with us from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi, Veronica. I think the songs I'm going to give you are from the Great American Songbook, or at least they should be. They're incredibly spiritual, and for those of us who are not religious, I think they convey something that is missing in our life from religion. You Don't Know What Love Is by George Benson. It's been recorded by many different people. I consider it a smooth jazz standard. And two by Sinatra, The World We Knew, and I Can't Believe I'm Losing You. I'll hang up.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And you want to comment on those, Adam?
I definitely am familiar with the Sinatra. I'm not so familiar with You Don't Know What Love Is. I do pick a lot of books from the Great American Songbook, or songs, sorry, from the Great American Songbook in here. And Frank Sinatra has a whole chapter, so... I really did look at a ton of Sinatra material to figure out the best. I do have a top 10 about Sinatra, and then I also have one of his songs in, I believe, in my top 10 of the top 100, Only the Lonely. It's number 7 in my top 10 of all time. So, yeah, Sinatra can do it. I think he called himself at one point an 18-carat manic depressive. And, a lot of people that I've talked
surprising.
To are kind of – yeah, I mean, people are kind of surprised that Sinatra's in the book at all, because a lot of people have a vision of him as being, you know, a part of the Rat Pack, you know, ring-a-ding-ding and all that. But, you know, he had this other side where he recorded, a handful of albums that were – just incredibly sad. A lot of them, they were just front to back sad. I mean, they were just sad albums, and that was their point. And a lot of them are absolute classics. I mean, In the Wee Small Hours, Where Are You? Only the Lonely, which is my favorite, September of My Years. And then a kind of a obscure one that he did later in his career, Watertown, which is a concept album about a father whose wife leaves him, and he's left to raise his kids on his own. And it's as close to kind of a rock album as Sinatra ever got, probably. But it's very, very sad from beginning to end. I think it's pretty overlooked, and I really enjoy that album. So,
all right. Well, thank you so much for that call, Jim. And I want to read some of the comments on Facebook that we've gotten. Al from Land of Lakes says his favorite sad song is Louis Armstrong's Black and Blue, especially the line, "Even the mouse ran from my house." And Chad on Facebook says his is Mine, Kettering. Mine is Kettering by the Antlers. The entire album is sad. It tells the story of an abusive relationship through a metaphor of a dying cancer patient and a hospice worker. He likes it because it feels real and passionate. And Angie likes I Can't Make You Love Me by Bonnie Raitt, best breakup song she's ever heard. And Sheila says she loves First Christmas Away from Home and There Were Roses by Tommy Sands. Anything jump out there for you?
Yeah, you know, I do have a Louis Armstrong song, not that one, but I have his version of St. James Infirmary Blues in my top 100, which is, you know, kind of a classic and has been, you know, twisted and turned in a number of different directions by a number of different artists over the years. And then also the cancer element. there are a handful of, you know, most of that is pretty recent. But there was a, you know, there was a spate of sad country songs released kind of in the early 2000s, I believe. And it was actually kind of cordoned off and called cancer or country, yeah, cancer country, as a almost as a subgenre, because there are so many songs about sad songs about cancer being written. But yeah, there's quite a few of those, and I actually found, you know, I have an essay about disease and songs about disease in the book. Lots of things about tuberculosis from quite a while ago, and it does lead up into kind of more specific things to today, like, you know, cancer songs. There weren't a lot of cancer songs,
right,
you know, in the 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s for that matter. It's kind of a more recent phenomenon. And there's a really great song in my top 100 called My Mom by Chocolate Genius, which isn't a very well-known song, but it's about his mom. He's going back home and he's visiting his mom who's dealing with Alzheimer's. And it's a really sad song.
Yeah, those songs, are they special at all in the pantheon of sad songs? Because, you know, they're permanent and there's something real about you naming a disease.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that they are all that special when you look at everything. I mean, there's a lot of songs about death and dying. Disease is obviously, you know, once you name it and if you've gone through that or if you've seen somebody gone through it, I'm sure that it hits you very hard. But I think that's true with a lot of things. I mean, in the book. I mean, there are a lot of songs about, you know, the grief of someone dying. And, you know, I think that all those things and some of those things may be more universal. Everybody's lost someone that they love. Not everyone's lost them to a disease. So it may be a little bit more universal, those other songs. But yeah, I'm not sure that it's a special category. Necessarily.
Well, we're talking this hour with Adam Brent Houdeling. He is the author of This Will End in Tears, The Miserablest Guide to Music. He's also a writer, editor, and a singer-songwriter. And as we go out, let's listen to Johnny Cash. We haven't paid homage to Johnny Cash yet, and you've got his song Hurt in your book. Here's a little bit of that on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
See if I still feel I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend.
Sand deserted shore, your fickle friends are leaving. Oh, but then you know, and then it's time for them.
Talking this hour with Adam Brent Houdeling. He's a writer, editor, singer-songwriter, and the author of This Will End in Tears. I'm Veronica Rickert with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're listening here to Nina Simone. Adam, what can you tell us about this song?
I'm so happy that you played that song. It's one of my favorites.
It's gorgeous.
Absolutely. It was originally written by folk singer Sandy Denny, but I mean, I think Nina Simone owns it. Lots of people would argue with me about that. But she does in this version, there's a relatively long introduction where she gives a speech to the audience, and she talks about time. And she says, time is a dictator. And where does it go? What does it do? Most of all, is it alive? Like she just kind of asks these questions into the audience, and it's really kind of there's almost something mysterious about it when you're listening to her talk about that. But I love the fact that she, you know, kind of brings together kind of her interest in, you know, her training in classical music and her interest in contemporary, more contemporary music and contemporary folk. It kind of fuses all that together. It's got a really beautiful piano solo that she plays towards the end of the song. And I personally just, you know, time, like thinking about time and the past, and
right.
That hits me really hard. So this song is, you know, one of my favorites in the book.
Yeah, it's hard to feel happy when you think too hard about time, isn't it?
Yes.
That says it all. Okay, let's go to another call. Steve. Steve joins us from Wales. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Hey, thanks for taking my call. This is a great show. I'm a musician and a father of four girls, and I play a lot of John Prine music. I think he's absolutely the most depressing songwriter there is in terms of sad stories. But we have it's funny because we have a family band now where most of those girls participate in it. And, I didn't let them, listen to John Prine music until they were 18.
Really?
Well, I'm exaggerating a little. I'm sure they heard some. But basically, and we play a lot of John Prine music. And Sandstone is just absolutely a classic. You left out one line that I think is a classic line. That line says, there's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes. I mean, here's a daddy, here's a morphine addict, and that's where all the money goes. And that one has just always struck me as incredibly powerful. So I agree with your vote for John Prine. That's for sure.
You're agreeing with Adam? I shouldn't have taken that
call.
Sorry,
Veronica.
Thanks a lot, Steve. You're right. That line about the hole in the arm for the money goes is bleak. I'm going to have to listen to that one. And, you know, we did get a lot on Facebook, and I want to play one of the songs from the Facebook contributors. And maybe you know about this one, Adam. It's Brick by Ben Folds 5, and Michael liked this one.
And we drive. Now that I've found someone, I'm feeling more alone than I ever have before. She's a brick and I'm drowning slowly off the coast and I'm headed nowhere.
Any thoughts about that one, Adam?
Yeah, I'm certainly familiar with it from when it came out. I listened to it once as a possible inclusion in the book, and I kind of passed it over. But if I remember correctly, and geez, you know, we're talking about so many dark things. if I remember correctly, that song is about a rape. And I can't remember the specifics about it, but that's the only thing I can recall about the song. But yeah, I'm certainly very familiar with it from when it came out. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Michael, for suggesting that one. And thanks to everybody on Facebook who gave us your thoughts about sad music. And we'll move next to Kathy. Kathy joins us in Rhinelander. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi.
Simon Garfunkel always got to my heart. Maybe they're not so much sad as wistful or pensive.
Yeah, they are wistful, aren't they?
And Homeward Bound, even though it's the words are not exactly sad, to me it has sad undertones. And, of course, there's other songs that are sadder, like Sounds of Silence or The Boxer or The Loneliest Boy in New York. And even up-tempo songs like Why Don't You Write Me? I guess that's just Paul Simon. they all have that kind of tinge of sadness.
Yeah, there is. They are wistful, aren't they, Adam? That's almost maybe melancholy is how I would think about them.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, there's lots of, you know, people often ask me about what exactly makes a sad song sad. And there are a lot of different traits. There are, you know, minor chords and tempo and lyrics and, you know, lower registers like we talked about. And yeah, you know, no one of those things makes a sad song sad. So, you know, she was talking about songs that were sad that were up tempo, or songs that were sad that had, you know, more hopeful kind of lyrics. And, you know, all of those things happen. I really tried to focus on, you know, sad songs that were sad in as many different ways as possible. So, yeah, I mean, I'm certainly familiar with those. There's a song called The One by Lamb Chop, which is one of my favorite sad songs. And it, you know, it brings me to tears many times I've heard it. But, you know, the lyrics are kind of hopeful in that one. So I thought too hopeful to include in the book, despite, you know, it being an incredibly sad song and one of my absolute favorites.
So you were squashing all the rays of hope.
I couldn't do it. Well, that's kind of the point.
Yeah. Well, now here's one where it's hard to find a silver lining, I guess. Gloomy Sunday. Before we listen, tell us a little bit about the backstory on this one.
Oh, boy. Gloomy Sunday.
This is the Bjork version that we have, by the way.
Oh, fantastic. I have, you know, that's in my saddest songs list. It was actually written by a it's kind of about lynching in the South and bigotry, and it's a really, really dark song. The poetry in it is really dark. It's beautiful, but it's dark, incredibly dark. It was actually written by a Jewish high school teacher.
Oh, no, wait, you're talking about Strange Fruit, aren't you?
Yes, I am. It was written by a Jewish high school teacher named Abel Meeropol.
Right.
Billie Holiday was the first one who really, really did it. And still, you know, a lot of people, most people would consider she owns the song. I mean, I would consider it too. She owns the song. It's, you know, some of the lynching imagery about bulging eyes and twisted mouths and... She talks about, you know, it being a strange and bitter crop in a way, like someone who had been lynched. So it's really powerful and extremely leveling.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.
It's Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit. And as we get close to the top of the hour here, let's get another phone call. Patty joining us from Eau Claire. Hi there.
Yes, good morning. Good
morning.
What a great topic. I tend to find the saddest songs have a theme about oppressed people. And Patty Griffin actually has two songs on a Flaming Red CD. One is called Tony, about a young boy who's very vibrant, but he's gay. And eventually, as he ages, the world tells him that he's wrong and bad for loving, and he ends up committing suicide. And then the other one is Goodbye, about another suicide song. And the last line of it is, I wish there was some better way to say goodbye. And those two songs, I have to pull over when I hear those.
Mm. Yeah. So,
thank you so much for the topic.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling up and sharing your experience. Adam, do you know those?
You know, I'm not as familiar with either of those, I have to say. But it's interesting that call, you know, came right after we played Strange Fruit, which is,
right.
You know, definitely when that came out, you know, lynching was still a problem. And, you know, I don't know, if you're not incredibly moved by that song, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, Adam, it has been so fun to talk about sad music. Is there something wrong with
yeah.
that? Maybe we should be more depressed, but it was a lovely hour. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Adam Brent Howdling is a writer, editor, singer, songwriter, and the author of This Will End in Tears, The Miserablest Guide to Music. And you can still vote for your favorite sad song on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show, listening to some Otis Redding as we go out. I want to thank Marika Suval for producing this hour, and Rodna Fanning for finding all this wonderful music and for doing our technical direction. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
With you, my life.
It was a dark and stormy night, and Wisconsin Public Radio was looking for ghost stories, but the clock was ticking. Wisconsin Public Radio is holding a flash fiction contest. We're asking you to send us an original work of fiction, a ghost story in 600 words or less. Your deadline is midnight, October 7th. Find out more at wisconsinlife.org.